Okay, it's after 4 o'clock and we've got a quorum now, so let's go ahead and get started. Call the meeting to order. Need to approve the minutes of August the 21st. Are there any additions, alterations, or deletions that we need to take care of? Hearing none, is there a motion?
I move approval of the August 21st, 2019 Public Utility Commission meeting minutes as written.
All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Okay, Stephanie or Courtney is keeping us online here getting us back into the regular program of electing officers. So we need some nominations for chair and vice chair.
I nominate Gary Hausman for chair. I nominate Gary Hausman for chair.
Is there any other nominations? All right. I guess I'm gonna be chair. Okay, let's open up for vice chair. I move that Dan Hurley be vice chair again. Did a great job last year. Is there a second? Is there any other nominations? Hearing none, I guess congratulations.
Yes. Yes. All right.
We're still the team.
Okay.
Let's move on to citizens' reports. We've got a couple of citizens that'd like to address us. Let's start with Dick.
Dick.
Delaney.
Thank you. Just wanted to let everybody know and invite you to the public forum that Platte River Power Authority is holding in Longmont, Loveland, Essex Park, and Fort Collins. The one in Loveland is October 17th at 6 o'clock at the Devereaux Room down in the Rialto Center. And they are looking for a lot of public input. They give presentations, then they'll take questions from the floor. The last time they did this was in October, November of 2018 over at La Quinta. Was it earlier than that?
It was earlier than that.
It was earlier than that. But
it was over at Embassy Suites.
Embassy Suites, yeah, that's what it was. And anyway, you all invited. It should be an interesting show. They're going to be in Longmont on the day before, so if you can't make it there, you can go down there. That's in Park Street Dress. I can't remember when. So anyway. That's all I want to do is invite you, and I think your meeting is the day before that next time, so we'll have one more chance to talk about it.
Okay. Dave Mills.
My name is Dave Mills. I've been a resident of Loveland for about 40 years, and I was a semiconductor engineer with Hewlett-Packard, so I've worked with silicon wafers for a long time. Never built a solar system, but I know what they look like. So I would just like to encourage the group to do what you can on rates to encourage people to build solar systems, residential solar, because I think it does help to reduce the load on the utility and to help us to do things to reduce global warming and improve the air quality. The other two things I wanted to mention are electric cars. You have a brand new parking lot at the Foundry, and I've heard that there's wiring that's been put in the walls that you can add chargers, but there's no chargers there. I'm not sure if the wiring's there or not, but I think a parking lot where employees have their cars parked all day long would be a perfect place to have chargers. So I'd like to encourage the city to add some chargers to that parking lot. And the other thing I would like to say is there's been a charger at the city library for about a year that's been broken.
We're working on that right now.
Okay, well, one out of three. Thank you very much. That's all I have.
And I honestly don't know about the Foundry, and that's not necessarily parking for City of Loveland employees. That's a general citizen parking lot. It's an open parking lot. And I honestly don't know whether that's going to be hooked up for electric vehicles.
My point is, where's a good place to put chargers? A good place is where people are going to park their cars for a long time, for a couple hours anyway. It seems like that's a wonderful place to do that.
Anyone else? Okay, hearing none. move on to the informational item. Are there any questions or comments about item number one? Jim does such a good job, we don't need to question.
I wholeheartedly concur with that.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Gary.
Consent agenda. We have three items on the consent agenda. Staff has reviewed and approved these items. Is there a motion to accept them?
Number two, okay.
Any other one? All right, let's hear a motion for items number three and four being approved on the consent agenda.
I move to approve the consent agenda less item number two.
Second.
Okay, motion second. Any discussion? Okay, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
All right, that's approval number two for review here. And
page
11.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Question I have is actually on page 12. Regards, there's two Wesco bids in there.
That's a very confusing point, and yes, there are.
Yeah, hi, sorry. Yeah, so we did receive two bids from Wesco. They were just, they were for the same materials, just the way the ownership of the material was presented in it. So in the one bid that was actually lower price, we would own the cable the entire time that it was sitting at the distribution location. Whereas in bid number two, the one we actually selected, the ownership of the cable remains with the distributor, so they're therefore responsible for any damage that might occur. So that was the two.
Okay, I just didn't know why we had two or if it was a typo and there was actually a fourth bidder in there. Or?
No, it was something that they were just offering as a, you know, consideration for cost savings, I guess, another way to approach it. But ultimately, just given the additional risk of the responsibility falling to us, we decided to go with option two from them versus option one.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Any other questions?
Okay. I move to award the contract for primary underground cable to Wesco in an amount not to exceed $715,500 and Western United in an amount not to exceed $278,200 and authorize the city manager to execute the contract on behalf of the city following consultation with the city attorney to modify the contract in form or substance as deemed necessary to protect the interests of the city.
Second.
Okay, is there any more discussion? Okay, let's have a vote on it then. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? All right. Thank you. All right. Regular agenda item 2020 water power schedule rates, charges, fees. Jim, you going to help us out?
Yes. There it is, full screen. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, good afternoon. Time for our annual journey through what we are proposing for 2020 as far as rates, charges, and fees go. And so what we will do is for all three of the utilities, we'll be looking at the driving forces behind the need for the rate increases and then how it will affect typical customers' bills. And then also do some comparison with surrounding communities as far as what our rates and bills look like. And then we'll touch on the proposed impact fees for 2020 as well. And then we did our every other year comprehensive update of our scheduled rates, charges, and fees. And so that's also incorporated into the packet. So for power, obviously we spent a lot of time this year on the power rate study. And we're proposing a 5% rate increase overall average. And that'll be consistent with the results that came out of the cost of service study. And the All of the increases that were proposed were recommended here in the July meeting and then taken to a study session with council in August, where they reviewed it and we answered their questions and concerns that they had about any of the things that were proposed. The increase is a combination of a pass-through from Platte River and then also some in-house needs. And the rate increases were driven by class based on the outcome from the cost of service study. So in terms of the reasons for the rate increase, as I said, a combination, Platte River is proposing a very modest 1% increase for 2020. And that translates to a 0.1% retail rate increase that we have to incorporate. And Platte River is citing increased purchase power expense, additional staffing, and just inflation that they build into their general operating expenses, and some new debt financings, and then continued investment in their demand-side management programs. As far as our in-house piece of it, 4.19%, we are looking to rebuild our fund balance after the requirement of $2.8 million for Power's part of the new utility billing system that will be coming online next year. We've talked a number of times about the obligation for the work up the canyon as a result of decommissioning the hydro plant and removing trestles and pipeline and then restoring landscape. We're estimating $5.5 to $6 million for all of that. Cost allocations for services provided by other city departments for water and power, IT, HR, facilities, etc. A $285,000 increase versus 2019 is that'll be a recurring expense for Power, and then just a lot of rehab-related capital projects.
Jim,
oh sure.
Want to wait for questions or?
But we can hit them as we go along if you'd like, Sean.
The second bullet there under in-house needs, the estimated $6 million, is that reimbursable from FEMA or is
it? No, sir. It is not. This is the cost of surrender. We held a FERC license for the hydro plant, and these are the costs associated with surrendering that license, which includes removal of above-ground appurtenances like trestles and so on. It includes some work which we have yet to fully define with the Forest Service. We're still in negotiations with that. There's also work associated with abandoning a penstock that goes near some homes up there. So all of this work has to be completed and then wrapped up, presented to FERC, and as part of the licensure surrender. We would have had to spend this money irrespective of the flood, so not FEMA reimbursable.
Related to that, is this number lower because of the flood?
No.
If we were to remove the dam and everything, so
it would have been actually more. The flood actually did us a favor in that respect.
That's what I was saying. Right. Yeah. So this
took away some of the material.
Yeah.
So what if you didn't surrender?
I don't know. I can't answer that question. I don't honestly know. I think that they would probably mandate it because there's no longer a hydro facility.
Might be cheaper.
Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting point, Gary, because if the flood had not happened, obviously we would still have the hydro plant. The hydro plant was functioning horribly for years, and we were spending a lot more maintaining it than we were the savings we were getting from what it generated. So I think if you want to call it a blessing that the flood did what it did and kind of made the decision easy. But would have just continued going along, probably in a losing position year after year if we had kept it.
I think we had already begun the process of renewing our license when the flood hit.
Yeah, I saw documents stating that we were considering that before the flood, surrendering the license.
And Sean, as far as FEMA reimbursements, we did end up getting roughly $7 million in total. Toward the cost of the new Foothill Solar and the substation that was built there, Foothill Substation.
So this really isn't, and I confused it by adding FEMA to the mix. It's not a flood recovery work, it's related to the abandoning of the FERC license?
It is.
Correct.
Yes.
And so that would have been a process regardless.
That's correct.
We had decided to do that.
Yes. So as far as for our major rate classes, the impact on residential will be a 4.69% increase. Our small commercial, small general service class, a 4.19% increase. So those both are getting a bit lower than the overall average increase. A large general service, a 5.59% increase. In looking at impacts on customers, residential, and assuming 700 kWh per month, our actual usage in 2018 was 670 kWh per month. But you'll see in a few slides that the Colorado Association of Municipal Utilities, or CAMU, does a survey, and they use 700 kWh to do the comparisons of all the different utilities in the state, so that's why we anchor in on that. So for a residential customer, about $2.80 more on average per month for their bill, and then for the small commercial customers, it would be $10.20 more. In terms of doing a comparison between us and our neighbors to the north, east, and south, looking at residential specifically, we have the highest of the four for a typical bill, and that's based on the summer rates in terms of what we're proposing. Fort Collins, Greeley, and Longmont, those would all be based on their current 2019 rates, ours, the 2020 proposed rate. Something that is interesting to note is that looking at Longmont, obviously the big difference between us and Longmont, did no rate increase in 2015, 2016. In 2017, they raised the base charge $2 a month, and they did no increase in 2018 or 2019. So 4 out of the last 5 years, they've done no rate increase, and then the 1 year they did a very modest one. So that's hard to compete with, and it really explains the difference between them, and they kind of set themselves apart from the other three cities. Something else to mention is that Longmont is looking to go AMI with all of their metering infrastructure, and last at least that I heard, I don't know if Joe's heard more recently, but in August, what I understood was their city council wants to cash fund that. And if that's what they do, then they're going to be looking at some rather significant rate increases over the next 3 to 4 years to fund that AMI. Looking at comparisons for commercial, in this one, Loveland is third of the lowest, with Longmont once again being the lowest of the four. And then here is this is that survey that I was talking about, the CAMU survey, which is done twice a year. It's a survey of as many of the electric utilities in the state are willing to participate in it. So for this round, there were a total of 46 that participated, and of those 46, based on the summer rates, which is what the July survey incorporates, Loveland was 11th lowest out of the 46. And something that is interesting to note is that when you look at the 9 non-summer months, then in this survey we actually are sixth lowest out of the 46 utilities. And then for the commercial, the small commercial, with that one, we are 22nd lowest out of 46, so more in the middle. And then again, looking at the 9 non-summer months, we are 12th lowest out of 46.
Jim, could I ask you to go back up to the residential comparison, Longmont?
Sure.
Greeley.
Huh?
Sorry, the local.
For residential? Sure.
So am I correct to remember in Fort Collins, Longmont, and Loveland are all PRPA members, whereas Greeley is not?
That's true. That's a good point, Shai. Greeley actually is served by XL.
So I know on the water side it's always challenging or interesting to make comparisons for a variety of reasons of it's not apples to apples. Does the same thing sit with electric as well? Particularly Greeley, for example, not being a PRPA city, they're dealing with Excel, we're not. Is a comparison even make sense?
It's a fair question, and I know that Joe has a very defined opinion about that.
Well, it's every utility, water or power, is absolutely unique in terms of its history, in terms of where it receives its water or its power, what its source water, source power is, and the condition of its infrastructure. Thus, everyone has different needs. And so sometimes, I mean, it's always interesting, you know, where do you fall? Are we not paying high rates? Are we paying low rates? But the fact that each utility should be recovering enough revenue to pay for its current costs and put some away for the future, as well as have reserves. So, you know, I look at some of these, and I don't know how Fort Collins is only charging $6 for a base charge, and Longmont is 7 cents, because they've been receiving the same power increases that we have over the last X number 4 or 5 years from Platte River. So I simply cannot explain, unless they have made a choice for whatever reason to hold those rates, and the financial state that we choose to be in, very conservative state with large reserves, maybe they don't. I can't speak to that.
Well, I have a question about the base rate. So with Windsor, I was talking to a guy that lives at Ptarmigan, and so is that Fort Collins, or is that, I'm assuming that's Fort Collins service, but he says that they, during peak hours, their rate, it goes up 5 times.
They do have, Fort Collins has, since last October.
Yes.
They're coming on a year now of time of use, time of day,
yeah,
time of
very,
use rates.
Very big, steep hit that they take during those and peak hours.
Yes.
So if this is a base rate, then that's how they're making up for it, is by
the variable. Yep. Could be.
You said 5 times?
Don't quote me on that, but it's a very large increase, enough to make you go, what the heck are, you know, what the heck are we doing?
I do know that there that the differential between the off peak and on peak for Fort Collins earlier in the year was 3 times.
3 times.
So,
yeah,
but
okay.
Maybe when they get into the summer months, it gets even greater.
Yeah. So.
Sure, and I would echo Joe's sentiment, Sean. And but it seems like, especially City Council, they always want to know how we stacking up with the the surrounding. We've had a conversation or two this year about residential self-generating rates, and so where to. Not do a comprehensive recap, but sort of a quick backup. We went to City Council in May for a study session and presented 4 options to them, and they said bring back 2 in August. And the 2 that they wanted brought back were, if you remember, option 3, which was that the key tenets of option 3 are that we will buy back from the self-generating customers at the same rate it costs for us to purchase from Platte River. That's one. And then this $1.59 per kW of installed capacity. So that was option 3. And then option 4 was the same thing as option 3, except you did away with the $1.59 per installed kW of capacity. And so option 4 leads to a revenue shortfall of about $10,300 projected for 2020. So when we brought this to you all in July and got your input on that, it was a 7-1 vote in favor of option 3. So we then went to City Council on the 27th of August for a study session to kind of recap the whole study with them, and asked for their direction on how to design the rate for 2020. And their direction, there were 5 counselors that were there, and 4 said do option 3. So, and I think it's worth mentioning that 2 of the city counselors said, if the LUC says option 3 is the best way to go, then that's what I support. So it was heartening to me to hear that all of the time that you guys spend analyzing things and that we grind through this stuff, that it mattered to the city councilors in making their decision.
Great.
And then a couple of other things worth mentioning as far as changes for 2020. Platte River is going to go from 3 summer months to 4 summer months. They did an analysis over a number of years of the month of September and feel like based on the usage profile for September that it better fits as a summer month than a non-summer month. So what they are proposing for 2020 is going to be voted on by their board next month. Will include a fourth summer month and then 8 non-summer months. And then the other change for what we're going to be doing in 2020, and we talked about this here with Mark Beauchamp, was that for our residential customers and our small commercial customers, we're going to have a second level base charge for those residential customers with greater than 200 amp services, and then for the small commercial customers that have three-phase service instead of single-phase service, just because it's a more expensive facility that we have to set up to serve those customers, so we're acknowledging it with a higher base charge.
Jim, before you flip, so what is that, the first one there, the four summer months, mean in practical? Do they, I should probably know this, they charge us more in the summer months than they do in the non-summer months?
Yes, exactly.
And so in the models that you run, what number are you putting in there? If they haven't, do they have a number, they just haven't voted on it yet? Or it's going to be the same as the summer?
Yes. They'll be voting next month on what they want to set the summer rates at and the non-summer rates at. And so the impact to us for 2020 is going to be a 1% increase overall. So they will be adjusting those non-summer month rates in such a way that they're projecting it'll be a 1% increase for Loveland.
Got it. Thank you.
Sure. Okay, before we move on to water, any other questions about power?
Could you summarize, yes, for those of us that weren't in on these discussions, the rationale for the charge per kilowatt hour? So why does a bigger solar system pay more than a small solar system?
The $1.59 per
right.
kW?
Right. Just a quick summary of the rationale for that.
Okay. So, trying to think of how deep to get into this. At the city council study session, I took a crack at trying to explain something, which is if we were to recoup all of our fixed distribution costs in that monthly base charge, it would be $26 per month instead of $15.79 per month. Mm-hmm. So we recoup roughly $10 a month via the kWh charge of our fixed costs. Okay, so on average, our non-solar residential customers use 670 kWh per month. So we can recoup that $10 when we're billing 670 kWh per month. Our solar customers' overall average is 230 kWh per month of net usage, and so that doesn't give us enough kWh to recoup all of that $10. So when the bigger the system that you have, the more net generation you're going to have and the lower number of kWh that we have to collect that $10 from. So that's why we need to get that $10 from somewhere. So that $1.59 per kW is the mechanism to do it. And so if you have a bigger system, then you're on average going to have less kWh that we would bill you for each month, if that makes
sense.
But
we are selling electricity at a wholesale rate.
Dave, we need to, okay. Yeah, well, this is a presentation.
Okay.
There's all of the background information is contained on our website. All of the presentations that led up to this are available for download.
Okay.
So we will move on to water then. And we're proposing a 7% rate increase for water for 2020, which is consistent with the 10-year rate track that council adopted when we did the rate study last year. They adopted that in November. It's really aging infrastructure, reliability, and redundancy that we're needing to have those dollars for. And then and this rate increase, in contrast to power, will be the same for all of the rate classes. As far as an impact on an average water customer, be looking at about $2.57 a month of an increased bill, and then for a commercial customer, $4.33. Comparing us again to Fort Collins, Greeley, and Longmont, for residential, we would be third lowest of the three, with Longmont the lowest, and then Greeley the highest. And for commercial, we're again third lowest of the four, but in the commercial case, Fort Collins has the lowest monthly bill. And again, looking at things on a more broad basis, this would be a comparison of 19, I guess you'd say Northern Colorado water utilities. And so again, these are the current rates for the other utilities. And what we're proposing is right here for 2020. So kind of right in the middle, maybe a little below the middle for the residential class. And then for the commercial class, very similar, right in the middle. For wastewater, a 7% rate increase is proposed, again, in conjunction with the council's rate track that they adopted last November. Aging infrastructure, again, reliability, redundancy. And then a big driver for wastewater also is regulatory compliance. And again, with wastewater, it'll be 7% for all of the different rate classes. So an average bill for residential going up $2.13 a month, and for commercial, $4.90 a month for a 3/4-inch tap. And then again, doing the comparisons here, for wastewater, Loveland third lowest of the four cities, with Greeley being the lowest. And then for the commercial, Loveland is the highest of the four, going a bit, just a bit above Longmont, and then Fort Collins the lowest of the four. So looking at things again more broadly here on residential, what we're proposing for 2020 again puts us pretty well in the middle on the residential side. And then on the commercial, maybe just a little bit above the middle of the 18 utilities that we gathered information for. So that's it for the rates part. We still need to talk about the impact fees. So any questions on water and wastewater rates? Okay. Blocking you. All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we'll take a look at our impact fees, our plan investment fees, and our system impact fees, water and wastewater system impact plan investment for power. So the methodology that we use to calculate our impact fees is called the equity buy-in approach, and it's very much akin to buying a share of stock in a company, where you have the value of the company divided by the number of shares, gives you a price per share. So what we do is we take the value of our assets, the value of our system, divide that by the number of customers that we have to come up with a cost per customer to buy into our system. And so when we go through this process each year, we bring our assets up to current replacement value and look at the change in how many customers we added during the course of the year, and then also how they are using our water and wastewater and power systems. So this might not be a fun trip down memory lane, but a year ago, we talked about how after the 2018 SIF update, there were a couple of things that we were concerned about and wanted to address. One was that our SIFs for the inch and inch and a half size taps for commercial were significantly higher than our neighbors were. And then a second thing that we were concerned about was that we had been using our customers' actual usage to come up with what we call usage ratios. So as an example, we set the 3/4-inch residential usage ratio at 1.0. It's kind of the standard. And then as an example, the 3/4-inch commercial tap uses about 1.3 times what a residential does, and an irrigation uses 4.5 times what a residential does. So would in essence count for like 4.5 residential customers. So in looking at how we were ratcheting up our SIFs from that 3/4 inch level. We came across something where, based on our actual customers' usage, the SI or the usage ratio for 1.5 inch irrigation was coming in higher than it was for a 2 inch irrigation. And Tanner went, we can't have that. So it really makes no sense that we would charge a higher impact fee for a smaller tap size. So those were two things that we felt like we need to address. And so what we came up with was a couple of things, which is we used summer data instead of annual usage data to generate the SIFs for water, because really the impact fees are about what impact is a customer having on our system during that peak time, which is going to be the summer months. And then the second change that we made is we used volumetric flow capacities to ratchet up the impact fees for the taps that were bigger than 3/4 inch. So we established a usage ratio between a 3/4 inch residential, 3/4 inch commercial, and 3/4 inch irrigation. And then from the 3/4 inch commercial and irrigation, we ratchet up to larger tap sizes by using volumetric flow capacity instead of our customers' actual usage. And that's a very widely used practice as far as impact fees go. So in doing so, that led to overall lower usage ratios. And is everybody have their eyes open still? I know this is not terribly captivating stuff, but anyway, the result of that is lower usage ratios tend to lower the impact fees for commercial and irrigation customers, which is one of the things that we were hoping to achieve. It tends to put upward pressure on the impact fees for 3/4 inch residential, because you have your assets in the numerator and a lower number of customers in the denominator, so it tends to push the fee up. And what we talked about and agreed to last year with you, with CAB, and with council, was that we would phase this change in over a 4-year period, so there wouldn't be too dramatic of changes all at one time. And anytime you make a change like this, you're always concerned about what's the impact going to be on revenue. It was almost revenue neutral. It was a slight gain, both for water and for wastewater, pretty negligible. So, in terms of what we're proposing for 2020, we're proposing an $80 increase in the wastewater system impact fee for a single family home, which is 2.9%. And that's being driven by increases in those current replacement costs of the assets, and then an increase in the work in progress, primarily for the work at the wastewater treatment plant, and then also an increase in outstanding debt, which tends to put a downward pressure on the fee. For water, proposing a $290 increase in the SIF, which is 5.5%. And there, again, the construction cost index going up, and then also an increase in the work in progress balance at the end of 2018 for water. Power, a $30 increase in a single family home, 1.4%. And there, again, the construction cost index pushing things up. And then we had a decrease in work in progress for power, which tends to push the fee down. In terms of doing a comparison between us and the three surrounding neighbors for residential, if you look here, you'll see that Loveland is second from the lowest, actually very close, about $900 different than Fort Collins, with Greeley and Longmont being $6,500 and $7,400 higher. Something to note with Greeley is that since Xcel is their electric provider, they do not have an investment fee for their electric utility. And then looking at things from a commercial standpoint, for a 3/4 inch commercial, Loveland is third lowest, but very close, you'll see, with Greeley. And then when you go to 1 inch, we're third lowest again, very close with Longmont. And then for the 1.5 inch, we're second lowest of the four cities. And that is a significant improvement. We were the highest in all three of these last year. So we are moving in the direction that we were hoping to as far as the cost for the commercial taps. And then in looking at things, wow, they just barely fits on the screen, doesn't it now? So this is a 9-year look at what the fees have done. And you'll see in the red there are some times where we've actually lowered them. But over the course of the 9 years, it's been an average of 2.2% increase per year. And what we're proposing for 2020 specifically is a 4.2% increase overall. So any questions on the impact fees?
And we did take these to CAP.
They will go to CAP in September because they canceled the August meeting. Yes. And then just one other thing to note is that you'll notice the lion's share of your packet is this radical overhaul of the schedule of rates, charges, and fees. And this, we believe, is a much more user-friendly format because essentially all of the fees are in the front and then all of the explanations about the fees are in the back, kind of more like an index. And it's our friend Michelle Erickson, who's responsible for putting this together. She spent many, many hours coming up with a format, going through many iterations and input. So we're very indebted to Michelle for that. And then there also is a new document we put in, which just does that year-over-year comparison of each one of the fees.
Very good.
And with that, any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chair, I just want to say one thing to echo what Jim just said. I do hope to take a quick look at that rate, schedules, and fees. You certainly don't need to memorize anything, and there are the numbers. But from a formatting standpoint and from a ease of use standpoint, it is light years better than what we have now. And again, that is due to Michelle's just tremendous dedication. That was her baby, and she did a heck of a fine job with that. So, you know, massive kudos to her.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Ready for more?
I move to recommend that City Council approve the proposed changes in the water and power schedule of rates, charges, and fees for 2020 as presented.
Is there a second?
Second.
Got 2 seconds. All those in favor indicate. Is there any more discussion? All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Anybody opposed? All right. Okay. Let's move on to item number 6, the Rural Water Master Plan.
Mary,
are
you
going to
hang it out?
The other one was too short.
Roger.
Sorry.
You should open it soon. I just turned you places, Roger.
And I just want to point out that we're going to be going over all of the questions that we're going to ask, the points we're going to ask. Except for the cash in lieu and the raw water, we just don't have enough analysis of that just yet, and we don't have a recommendation to bring back to you. And I think that it's incumbent on staff to have a thorough analysis and a sound recommendation before we get into any discussion. So it's going to be a tricky one, and we're still working on that. So, but we're going to address all the other issues today.
Huh? Left and right.
So Joe, what does that mean as a practical matter? Are we approving certain pieces and not other pieces, or what are we being asked to do tonight? Then?
All of the questions that came at the end of the draft raw water master plan, with the exception of those of the cash in lieu and raw water storage fee.
Okay. And you can handle those however you like, and just give us a nod up or down. As we go through them, you can take action on all of them collectively at the end or as we go. But we do have those things that are, I guess you'd call them outliers now, that we'll need to take some time and bring back to you. So.
Okay.
Well, I appreciate being able to come to you tonight. This raw water master plan has been a while coming together, as you know, but I think it's a document that will prove to be very useful to us as we look ahead to the future. It's always an interesting process when you're looking ahead and trying to project what might be happening as far as population, as far as water use, gallons per capita a day, as far as supplies that may or may not be available. And that's a particularly pertinent question when we look at the water markets that are existing around us right now. And the way our CDG water has increased so tremendously. There was an auction recently, Seekich Farms, down near Longmont. I'm not sure how many units were involved, but the average price at that was right around $55,000 a unit. And at least a unit or two went to $60,000, I'm told. So,
167 units.
Was that what it was? Okay, I knew it was quite a few, but I wasn't sure of the number. So that's certainly upward growth in the prices. Well, the intent of the options that we have here are really to look at the reliability of the water that the city uses, the sources that it has, and meet the charge from our city council, which we've operated under actually since sometime in 1985. I think it was August of 1985 when the council decided that they wanted the city to be able to provide water for the citizens in up to a 1-in-100-year drought scenario, and they included the words without curtailment. I've been asked what that means, and in reality, we don't know if a drought is a 100-year event until we actually experience it. So as we move into any sort of a drought scenario, we need to be careful and use our water very wisely. One thing that has been verified this month that we mentioned to you last month is that the city has in fact been capped by Northern as far as actually purchasing additional units of CBG water. We received a memo on September 5th confirming that we are capped. And so that means we can't purchase any more CBT units, but we can accept them if they're offered to the city as part of an application for a subdivision or something. So, did you have a question?
So I didn't want to interrupt your talk, but is that based on what are they? Is it based on what your yield is on your native and your boundaries, or what formula do they use to base that on, Larry?
Well, what it is it's our overall service territory.
Right.
And it's our overall supply. So it's the combination of East Slope, West Slope water, which is good to have both because they kind of balance each other out, especially in a drought scenario. Usually one side will be stronger than the other in a drought. But it's the entire community that we're talking about when we say those numbers.
So everything inside the line that's on your...
That we serve, yeah. Right, okay. Which is not exactly the same as the city limits,
right.
But the numbers served are nearly the same as in the city limits.
So I'm assuming they put that same limit on Fort Collins, Greeley, Windsor, everybody's got to live with that same formula, I'm assuming?
Well, okay, you're talking about what Northern does. Northern looks at your total supply of water, your total and projected demands. They look at any commitments to serve. If you've got subdivisions that have been approved that haven't been built yet, you can add those to your demand. It's a formula that goes through all of that. There are a couple of different ways of applying it, and whichever one is the most restrictive is the one that applies.
Okay.
And we're just over. We went through it very carefully, looking at any sources of demand that might apply here, and we were in the negative by a few hundred acre feet,
okay,
according to the calculations. So, and that does apply to actually any user. Any user has a cap. Even ag users are capped because before you can have CBT water on a farm, Northern will look at the native water on the farm first, see how much there is, and then you can only add in enough to reach up a full irrigation
supply. I've heard that they're getting really strict on that. So.
More so, probably. Yeah. But every single user, in some way or another, has a cap. That's right.
And
Larry, is it correct that this cap does not affect Windy Gap water?
Right, this has no bearing on Windy Gap. However, Windy Gap has a bearing on the cap because it's another source that we have that then counts as our overall supply and reduces the margin we might have for CBT.
Larry, is that calculation organic in the way the market structure, or is that a policy that can change in the future?
That is a policy, and in fact, it has changed. It's part of the reason we've crossed over the line from being above the line to below the limit. It used to be, there's a couple of things. The Northern used to allow using the 10-year average demand on the demand side. I'm sorry, they require that now. They used to allow you to use the highest of the last 10 years of demand. And so that made a couple thousand acre feet of difference to us right there. Just we had to average, you know, together what we're using over time. And with the variations that you have due to weather and whatever from year to year, that made quite a bit of difference. So that was one of the factors, and that was a change that was made in the policies at Northern by Northern's board. And, you know, other things affected. We've had greater efficiency. Our gallons per capita day has decreased. And as you use those lower numbers and project them out with your population, you have a lower demand out in the future that they're looking at. So that reduces it as well. So those are probably the two largest things that affected our calculations since the last time we've gone through this.
Do they use the firmed or the unfirmed values for your Windy Gap and your native waters?
Well, there are two ways of going through it. One of them is, let's see, one's firmed yield, and the other one, I think, I'm trying to remember how that worked. I believe they use an unfirmed number, and you can go through and compare the two, but whichever one comes up with the lower cap is what applies. Okay. So anyway, that's just a factor that, as we move ahead, is there, and we all need to be aware of it. So with that, what we'd like to do is go ahead through, there are actually seven slides of recommendations here, and each of those can be discussed however you like. We'll certainly try to explain our thought processes or anything that have gone into them. The idea here, though, is to formulate a set of recommendations that will move ahead to our city council along with the Raw Water Master Plan, which you have seen and have copies of, I believe. And that is the basis for what we've been doing, is using that plan. So we'll seek council's approval of that plan that we're using, and then of the recommendations below. So here's the first thing, and this already alluded to, goes back to 1985. Council said 1 in 100 year drought planning. Now if you look at this and compare ourselves with our communities, you realize that this is, in a sense, is a term of art, in a way, because there are different ways of defining a drought, and we've chosen a manner that says what is the worst that could happen over a 100-year period. Worst single event that might happen. Other communities around us have said what is the worst 7-year period that could happen to us, and I think Greeley and Fort Collins use that. And they define their events as 50-year events. But they're moving over a period of record. They're moving a 7-year time span and evaluating that. So that looks at maybe a different kind of drought. There's no right way to do this. It's just something that you have to look at and see what works for your community. So that's what they've given to us. That's what we've been doing now for quite a few years, many years. Further, they have told us in the past, at least, that conservation itself is not a long-term solution for what we're doing. Now, conservation is having an impact on what we're doing. I mentioned that our gallons per capita day is going down, and we're using those reducing numbers. But the message is we can't say we're going to accomplish a 10% reduction by X in conservation. At least that's the way we've taken it. But we are, in fact, reducing over time. And anything above
On conservation, then, is something that would help in events if we get into a 500-year event, one in 500-year event. You better start curtailing irrigation outside, those types of things, and make sure we can get through the event, and health and safety are taken care of with our supplies. So this is the first thing that is really a recommendation. It's bringing back before you and before council essentially the same information that we've used before. You want to discuss anything or take any action, or yes?
I'm sort of thinking we ought to start looking at more than just 1 year as our event horizon, since we seem to have two or three in a row, or one average year and another bad